Good morning. It is Thursday. This is the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here with you. I'm glad to see that Bo does not have to ride in the streets of Atlanta now with his news.
It was.
Which feels like it's your news.
And I didn't feel like riding with him, so I'm glad as well. I would have had his back, as I try to usually do, but that was not something I would have been looking forward to tonight. I barely made it to Hawks Tip at 10 p.m. Eastern last night. Watched a little bit of the Bama basketball game against Illinois, top 25 matchup, and I had like one eyelid open by the time the Hawks tipped against Golden State. So yeah, I would have struggled riding out with Bo last night.
I would have struggled myself because I tried to watch. I had a meeting for the Brown Grass yesterday, and then we had our call, and I ate dinner. Also, real quick side note. We've gotten to the point in life where whenever Amy is out for like a meeting or whatever and she eats, she just brings it home. And that's like my dinner is like the half of her leftovers, like or her leftovers, which is half of what her meal was. So that's what I had. I had some kind of jalapeno burger. It was really good. But anyways,
it's a hard left. All right.
So I sat down, I ate, and then I sat there and I was like, man, I'm going to relax. I'm going to watch this the final episode of The Penguin, which I'm still haven't fit. Don't know spoilers. I think I've already read one spoiler, and I'm a little upset. But I sat down to watch it. Literally, I got 2 minutes in. I woke up. It was like 8:15.
Yeah.
And I was like, I guess I'm just going to go to bed now.
Yeah, I'm not even going to tell y'all what time I went to sleep last night.
Body's
like,
shutting it down.
Toddler schedule.
Oh, like 6 p.m.?
But I feel...
Yeah, I wish my toddler was on
I feel good, but that's not living. But I needed it.
You know what?
That is living.
That is living.
That is living.
That is not living.
They're... Yeah,
shirt's on backwards.
It is.
It is on backwards.
Looks like it's choking you.
You're doing great, sweetie.
I just felt something on my neck, and it's
attacked. You're doing great, sweetie.
We'll fix that.
Yeah,
but I'm well rested.
Didn't feel that like in the car or anything.
Well rested. What?
You didn't feel it in the car?
No, I had on that bubble coat because it's freezing outside.
Like,
you guys didn't know.
What is that? How does that mask the fact that it's choking you?
Winter's here.
That is living. I disagree because you travel a ton. I travel a medium amount. Mike has two kids. So we don't get sleep every night like most people or like somewhat or like the doctors tell you to, right? So we are going to have nights where we get 3-4 hours of sleep. The nights where we get like 7-8,
it's,
I love it. I revel in it. Like
it's
I woke
luxury.
Up this morning and I was like, man,
yeah.
That doesn't happen all the time. But when it does, I'm okay with it.
No, that part of it's living, but going to bed at kid hours is not.
No,
I wanted to watch
disagree.
A documentary.
Living. No, that's living.
But I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I was like, man, it's already 6 o'clock and I am not.
No.
Dude.
I am fading.
Look, man,
fast.
Your last paragraph sounds like you're 75. You're like, I wanted to watch this documentary, but I went to bed at 6 o'clock instead.
I was trying to catch the.
Oh, yeah. I want to watch this too.
Exactly.
The which one?
Martha Stewart.
She was a model, dude.
I haven't seen that.
You didn't know that?
I did after the trailer.
I didn't know that.
Guys,
Tiff, can you help me with a little bit of self-reflection? Bo in the crossover said I tell stories longer than him. And I was like,
You repeat stories, but you don't tell stories longer than
You repeat stories. Yeah.
I know, you and you know what's funny is you called me out on it yesterday, and I was like, damn, you do the same thing, but I feel like I always...
No, I don't. Yeah. Me and my sister argue about this.
You do.
You both
but
repeat
stories. I always try to do such a good job of listening to it like it's the first time.
Like, I'm
you know what
out,
I mean? You're like,
yeah,
you told me that. I'm like, okay, cool.
Well, call me out. I need to know.
You do repeat
and that's
stories.
Why, that's
both
why
of
I brought up
do.
The self-reflection.
Both
that's
of
why
you
I brought
do.
Up the self-reflection.
Wait, so the self-reflection was
no, well, the self-reflection was, can you help me? Do I tell stories longer? Bo, because I want you to.
I'm sorry. But, Bo, you tell marathon stories.
I know.
Your story just now went from us talking about Chris Sale riding in the streets to somehow you're talking about the jalapeno burger because Amy travels and she always brings back whatever's left over for you to eat dinner. And then you almost caught part of the penguin and then somehow then you fell asleep. And then I don't know what happened.
So I'm not losing
it's not
my
that
mind.
I tell
not.
Long okay. stories. It's that my stories breed stories. See, the funny thing about...
That's what makes stories long.
The funny thing about Mike repeating stories is when you caught him out yesterday, he just still like completely rode over you and told the story again.
Yeah.
That was the best part.
Yeah.
Also,
and
this opening
the president
segment
again
has turned into us roasting each other, which I'm all here for.
Yeah,
I love this stuff.
We need to do that suspect thing that everyone does. Did you see the TNT crew? They did it with Charles Barkley.
What did they do to Bart?
Like one of the guys, they show him running, if you guys have seen this challenge. Barkley's pretending, you know, running lightly. And one of the guys is like, suspects Ozempic's not working because he still can't, his blankety blank can't lose weight or something like that.
Dang.
Right? Then there was one with Shaq where they were like, suspect got tired trying to name all of his kids.
Who's got more kids, Shaq or Dwight Howard?
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. I feel like we would probably all try to go for the jugular, though. And I don't know. Someone might cry to the left of me.
No, I won't go. I don't go for jugulars.
I said you might end up crying.
Oh, no. Trust me. I can handle whatever you got. You know what? Remember that Hard Knocks where it was one of the Cromarties? They asked him to name his kids.
Yeah. Antonio.
Yeah.
Yeah, did he successfully name all of them? I can't remember.
I don't know.
That's why I just want one.
It was the hesitation that was the interesting part of that. Yeah, that's why you just want one. You're afraid you wouldn't be able to name two?
Just say, hey, you, that's my parents too.
Oh, man.
I'm terrible. So we were at the, when I was doing in the meeting for the Brown
Grass. What's wrong with this man, Day-Day?
When I was at the meeting for the Brown Grass, somebody goes, we're gonna put this guy here. You know him. And I go, he's a member of the club. Yeah, I don't. Does he have a nickname?
Yeah.
What were you gonna say, Day-Day?
No, I was just gonna say try having four kids with all of them's names starting with the same letter.
Oh,
yeah. Why would you do that to yourselves?
Listen, I just follow the rules.
Oh, never mind. Must respect.
He just dropped Linda. Listen, Linda.
Must respect to Miss Day-Day.
Linda.
That's why George Foreman named all his kids George or Georgette.
Oh, my goodness. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Yes, we were originally talking about Bo not riding in the streets, and that is because Braves' Chris Sale, he is the winner of the NL Cy Young Award. So after having a comeback season, he received 26 of the 30-place votes from Baseball Writers Association of America to finish ahead of Philadelphia's Zach Wheeler, who received the other four, and Pittsburgh rookie Paul Skenes.
Yeah, I don't know why he only got 26 of the 30. He should have been unanimous like Tariq Skubal was, who got 30 of 30. Chris Sale won the Triple Crown. So did Skubal. 2.38 ERA, 225 strikeouts. He led the NL in wins. And you said it to Zach Wheeler, got four of the first-place votes. He, you know, his ERA was a 2.57. I don't know why it was even why there was even a question. I don't know why it was a split, not a split, but where he took four votes. Chris Sale was the most dominant pitcher from start to finish in baseball this year.
You know what's interesting about it to me, and I think it's the Braves' eighth Cy Young. Obviously, that group back in the 90s, and Warren Spahn, I think, was the other one. And I actually, that's a lot. Like, I think the Dodgers lead all time with 12.
You thought it was more.
I thought it was more. I was sitting there going, didn't they win 5 out of 6 in the 90s?
I think they won. I think it was like, because I want to say Maddux won like 95, or Glavine did one, and then Smoltz won 96, and it was like 97, 98.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, I think, yeah, like you said, Maddux won 3 in a row, I believe, and then it's, then it was Glavine, then it was like Smoltz a year or two later, and I'm sitting there going, 8? Like, and the only thing I come up with, I don't know when the Cy Young Award was created, so I'm like, maybe you missed, some of the guys you would have, but you'd think like, Phil Niekro and some of these other guys that the Braves have had, these great pitchers, you would have thought that they would have been closer to the Dodgers all the time.
Glavine won in 91, and then you had Maddux, so then I think Maddux won in 92.
He won 3 in a row.
Well, he won 93, 94, 95 for the Braves.
Right.
I want to say, though, that Maddux won 92 for the Cubs.
He might have.
And then Smoltz won 96. They skipped a year in 97. And then Glavine won 98.
Yeah, I was going to say Glavine was that 98 season. So that's crazy, man. But I thought it would have been more than 8. But it's not. But congratulations again to Chris Sale. Well-deserving. I don't know about, the sweep of the first-place votes, but whatever.
They should have.
I'm
mean,
just happy.
If Skubal did it, why didn't Sale do it? I understand Wheeler's a hell of a pitcher.
It's not about Sale, it's about competition.
Well, it wasn't that close.
Maybe you guys can debate it out later on in the show. We'll have more on Chris Sale up ahead. Your Atlanta Falcons, we broke down the defense and some changes the guys are hoping to see over the bye week. Now the offense is up. That's next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're back here on the Morning Shift.
Is it Baby Driver? The movie, that's what this sounds like.
Yeah, probably.
Baby Driver. Am I right on that? No, I mean not for the actual song, but you know the movie.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it does.
That's a great movie.
Great movie, and it's all over.
Filmed in Atlanta.
It's
got John Hamm in it. I think John Leguizamo's in it.
Such a good movie. Underrated.
But unfortunately, it's Kevin Spacey in it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's a creep. Well, I mean, that's not allegedly. That's pretty much known.
Yeah.
Like you leave no room to pivot sometimes.
Yeah, that's.
What do you mean?
I
just took all the room out the air up.
What is she supposed to do? Oh, speaking of creeps, the Falcons are creeping towards the end zone at a slow pace.
No, she should have said. Speaking of things that happened in Atlanta, I think speaking of things that are filmed in Atlanta, the Falcons are on their bye week. But you know, you could have done that. I mean, I can't write it for you, Tiff.
I don't even need a transition. Right, like, you can't even make a transition. It's like because you limited that ability for something normal to be said because you just ended with something.
I just spoke the truth. I just gave you a full.
I'm not saying you did.
Baby Driver, and then I ended with it had a creep in it.
I am going to call Tiff out.
It's a great movie.
I was chastised for last week saying that I was drinking coffee, hot coffee, and I was getting warm. I had to take my sweater off. Tiff's like, drinking a cold smoothie, I got to put my jacket on. And I was like, dude, this is the same thing.
First off,
I feel like we just, sometimes
different.
I came at you about your stories.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just.
Sometimes you're just like, yeah, you're stupid.
No,
and I'm like, whoa,
I know,
whoa.
We don't.
Whoa.
I've never said that.
What do you got to say there,
Mr.
Mio?
You've almost been reinstated as like kind of, like I'm in a good mood today, so you might be reinstated as the favorite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey.
You had a long run.
I did.
You did.
As the favorite or the underdog?
As the favorite.
Okay, good.
And then
I didn't
ended,
know we had favorites in here, but I guess
didn't know?
We do.
Well, yeah, I get
no,
to do that.
I've always
call somebody.
Trust me. You know when you're not Tiff's favorite. She doesn't do a good job of hiding
no,
it.
No, I'm easy to read, and I was talking to somebody about that over the weekend.
Tiff.
And it kind of stinks. Like, I wish I could, like, my face could lie better.
If I'm easy to read, you're blatantly, like, I don't even know what. Like, I called you the other day for the conference call. And you're like,
you weren't
hello?
Supposed to.
And then I go, well, damn. And you're like, oh, you heard that? Well, yeah, because you hit answer and then gave a deep sigh as if I wouldn't hear it.
No, honestly, it was taking a while for, like, it to connect. So I didn't hear you right away. Mm-hmm. So. You know.
Oh, that's why you sighed.
I was cooking.
To put a bow on this, have I ever been your favorite?
Ooh.
I mean, Dylan, you're neutral. You never really.
I never swayed either side.
You got out of pocket the other day with her, though. I can't remember what it was now. But you said something that was out of pocket with her, and I could tell
I
by her face.
But,
she was like, what?
But see, the spin, Dylan, is that being neutral is that, you know, you never get too high, just like the players say. You never get too high.
No, I'm good.
High.
I'm great with being neutral. That's good. That's where I want
it. I always like you.
Consistency is.
Right?
Yeah.
That's great.
You know,
that's
Day-Day,
the best answer I could have heard.
You know, Day-Day knows what he does that bothers me. That's not a story. I'm just kidding.
I don't think Day-Day knows, actually.
I was like, oh, he was confused.
All right, let's get back to the Falcons now. Guys, three things that they need to improve on or change offensively after we had extensive discussions about the defense yesterday.
Or for your transition to Bo, what do the Falcons do that bother you?
I tell you what bothers me is their red area production and efficiency.
All right.
And
I like where you're going.
It's actually I'm gonna two part this just to throw the whole show up in upside down. But the red zone efficiency, they're 53%, and it's not brutally bad, but it's been really bad lately, and what to me is causing the biggest issue in the red area is their penalties and untimely penalties. And we saw it the last 2 weeks in a row where they've been inside the red area and they've had massive penalties. I understand the Chris Lynch. I think it was BS. The reality is I actually think both of them were ticky-tack and shouldn't have been called.
Sure.
But it's happened too many times to this offense in other areas of the field where you have these big penalties that kill drives, but when it's in the red area, it's magnified.
Yeah.
And you can't go sign a guy like Kirk Cousins. You can't build this offense this team around the offense in the first round and with the last four draft picks in the top 10 all being offensive players, take the you can say just three because you can take the quarterback out of it, and not be efficient in the red area.
Yeah.
It is absolutely it's just unacceptable from this team because that's the way this team is built to win.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. And when you look at the penalties, I agree with you. It seemed to be always at bad timing because when you look at it, the Falcons are actually top 10 in penalties per play, which is pretty good. Like, you look at penalties per play, Falcons right now 0.05. That's actually a good number. Opponent's penalty of play is 0.06 for the defense. That's about the same thing, right? It's number 10 in the NFL. So you're about in the same way. When I get to the red area, though, I think about it differently. I think about it schematically and what the Falcons need to be doing. And that's one thing we have not been able to establish really in the last, let's call it 3 or 4 years, is a vertical run game. And that's what's so frustrating to me, because when you get in the red area, defense want to string you out towards the sideline. They want to be able to make you bounce, right? They want to be able to use the sideline as that 12th defender and kind of kick you out towards there and make you kind of reach towards the pylon. They don't want you to be able to go vertical. And yet the Falcons time and time again under Arthur Smith, and now with whoever's pulling the strings in terms of the run game, be it Zach Robinson or Dwayne Ledford, that's exactly what we do. We've tried to utilize more, and I can see them trying to get to it. We still don't utilize, and Lord knows I'm going to stand up on this chair every single time I get a chance and say we need to pull a lineman every now and then. It just pull them left, pull them right, pull a guard, center, I don't know, one of them. But you look at the best teams in the NFL, they pull linemen. But my point is that I can see them trying to. You and I have looked at some of the backside handoffs, some of the counter-type plays they're trying to install, even pointed out to you earlier today, they're in an inside zone against Denver on third and long. But it's just not working. And when you get in the red area, when you have the vertical passing game we do and you have an immobile quarterback, you have to be able to run the ball north and south in the red area if that's if that's something that you want to increase the percentage of. And yet we seemingly make no attempts until we get inside the 3-yard line. And then at that point, we're not built for that. Right, we get inside the 3-yard line. All of a sudden, they're in goal line defense. Now, all of a sudden, they've got 60 linemen on the field, and we can't get movement up front because Chris Lindstrom, our guard, weighs 300 pounds. So, it's frustrating to watch. And if they can start to up those numbers a little bit in the red area, I think that to your point, it'll pay dividends.
Yeah, it is almost like when we get the it is, and I know this is one of those things I get on the fans for sometimes, but I get an uneasy feeling when we get inside the 5-yard line.
Oh, me too.
Because you feel like you know exactly what's going to end up happening.
I feel like we're not going to get push and that we need it. And the point you're making is I can think of one time or one season in the last 15 years where I've been confident on short down and distance.
I bet I was there for it.
It was actually 22.
Okay.
That's the best to me. And that was the year where we were running like 200 yards a game, it felt like. And every time we ran the ball, it was against a loaded box.
Yeah.
And I felt like we could get – and even then, we weren't phenomenally good. But we were better than we had been in a long time. And there was probably 2010 as well.
Yeah,
now that
I
think
about it. Harvey's last year here when I was a rookie, we were – pretty solid.
That was
short yardage,
and that was a run first team. I think we forget that the 2008 to 2010 and a little bit of 11, even though we had Julio at that point, we were run first football teams.
Yeah.
I know we're short, and I'm going to get to it next break. But there is route concepts in the offense that I know that they have built in that I don't feel like they're doing enough of.
Interesting.
And I just think that I want to get your take. And maybe I'm missing the fact that we're doing it more than I realize.
Okay.
But the short yardage thing has been an issue. Red area, but the penalties. We have to get better on offense and penalties. You know, I saw last week penalties took points off the board. And in the last 2 weeks, even with the fact that you get knocked out, but also we can't have the dumb penalties on any side of the football. And we just can't the 10 and 15 yard penalties as a whole, and I know we're just talking about offense, are killing this team. It is burying us. We're not good enough to overcome it.
Yeah, and to your point, I think that any by any measure, and maybe look, both of y'all can tell me if I'm wrong. By any measure, I think we're more explosive right now than when we were last year. Right? Is that fair to say? We've got a top 10 passing offense. Bijan is ripping off, you know, 8-yard runs at a clip. He actually had an explosive against the Saints on the ground.
Yeah, that's
which we
fair
haven't
to
seen
say.
Him. Okay.
Yeah.
The problem is that we don't have off-script explosives in the Falcons offense. We don't do anything off-script, as a matter of fact. And a lot of people will trace that back to Kirk Cousins' mobility and some of the other things. But you look at the best teams in the NFL over the last 5 years, off-script explosives are a massive part of why these teams have been so good. And I'm talking about, think about the amount of times you see Jalen Hurts roll out and hit somebody downfield. Lamar, obviously famous for it. Brock Purdy, off-script. Patrick Mahomes, off-script. We don't do anything off-script, so when we get behind the eight ball in terms of penalty yardage like you're talking about, there's almost no overcoming it because we don't do anything like that.
And I push back slightly that there are some things I've seen off-script that either we don't realize it because of the quarterback hasn't left the pocket, but like Drake London has a play where Kirk is sitting, and Drake stops his route, realizes Kirk's not in trouble but still has the ball, and then turns upfield, he hits him. But then there's the off-script where you're first in 20, and Drake leans. He starts moving forward to, you know, before he's supposed to,
right,
and it wipes off a 20-yard play.
Well, again, and I agree with what you're saying. The off-script explosive, though, is what I'm leaning into because I don't know if Drake's catch on that one would have qualified as that. But yeah, anyways, good stuff.
Could we see some movement in the next edition of the college football playoff rankings, which happens to be next week? We don't know. We'll see what stems coming out of the weekend. There are some matchups that could lend itself to some upsets. We'll discuss next. We come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Right, we'll get to some of the matchups this week. Right now, I want to look at Tom Fornelli. We've talked about him on the show before, a writer for CBS College Football, and he does a power rankings for quarterbacks around college football. And so this week, he does have Shedeur Sanders at 1, Jaxon Dart at 2, Jalen Milroe at 3, 4, Dylan Gabriel, 5, Lenora Sellers of South Carolina, 6, Will Howard of Ohio State, 7, Curtis Rook of Indiana, 8 is Sam Leavitt of Arizona State, Clade Klubnik, Clemson, and Sawyer Robinson of the Baylor Bears.
The old Baylor Bears.
I just assumed everyone knew the other quarterbacks were there from Shedeur Sanders, Colorado.
Before we get to Shedeur, the Clade Klubnik, he's like kind of rebranding himself that he's a very good player. Not very, but he's a good player. And the play he made to win that game
saved
the other day.
Season.
Well, it saved their season, but you're watching the game and you're like, oh, okay, he's going to scramble. Oh! Yeah. Oh, no! Because he like ran like through like what was going to be like an ankle tackle, it felt like. And he kind of did a little high step just to get
it.
Through it.
Yeah.
And he just kept going, and it was like, I don't know, it's kind of like watching a glacier pass through the ocean because you're like, wait, he's moving faster than you think.
I also want to point out real quick that in Fornelli's list, it's not a draft board, and he doesn't rank any QB the week after a loss or if they are injured.
Yeah, so. I'm glad you said that. Is there anything that would hold him out of putting Cam Ward on this list? I mean, is there an injury? They're not coming off a loss. Right.
I don't know. Carson Beck's not on the list either. I thought he had a game that put him that would move him up because to me this list is fluid.
Yeah,
it is fluid. Yeah,
and you know Shador's the top because he's been balling out, and Colorado has won what like 6 straight or something.
And
like
that was his point because people were mad that he was never on the list before, but he's like they were losing before.
Yeah.
Like you don't rank him after a loss. Now they're winning, and he's making a surge up. His ranks and other people's conversations of quarterbacks with the way he's been playing.
And I think that Shedeur is really getting close to being a lock for the number one pick. I mean, I think it's Shedeur has been consistent in a year of extremely inconsistent quarterback play in college football. Like we had all these conversations about Carson Beck and Jalen Milroe and Garrett Nussmeier and you know, outside of the SEC, it's some of the other guys that we're talking about, obviously, on this list. Extreme inconsistency out of that entire group. And so when you look at Shedeur, he's been consistent. He's been the guy that's delivered. And he actually, I know that he was good last year, but I think, and I don't think this is all the new offensive line he's got, but he's made massive strides, in my opinion, in just getting the ball out even more efficiently. So I love what he's done. I do have questions, obviously, about the list, and I'm not going to go at Tom Fornelli about it because he obviously has a very unique list. I like unique lists that are not just reactionary to whatever you saw 3 days ago. And so, but I do wonder why you don't see Cam Ward on the list. I do love the fact that Lenore Sellers is starting to get a lot more love. So, quick thing on Lenore Sellers. They played LSU earlier in the year. He went off early in the game. He gets injured. He leaves the game. LSU comes back and wins. Right? He's injured, I think, the following week. He ends up coming back to play Bama in what I guess is like their fourth or fifth game. And I was like, we are making this kid look like he is all world. Like, please shut this guy down. And I couldn't figure it out at the time. And then I watched the next game and the next game, and then, and I was like, well, this kid's actually pretty good. Well, like, I'm sitting there knocking him. He's actually very good.
He's good. Rocket Sanders is a good player. He wasn't great at times against Mizzou, but he was stood up when it was the biggest. I mean, Sellers has done a good job, too, of finding guys that aren't always active in the offense. I can't remember the kid's name, and I apologize, but he caught the big touchdown in the game, one of the big touchdowns in the game against Mizzou, and he had like four catches in the last like 3 weeks or something, or 4 weeks, and he had like four or five against Mizzou, I think. Give Shane Beamer credit that he's gotten done a good job of finding the right guys and allowing them to grow in what they're doing, and Sellers is a perfect example of that.
And I want to go back to Shador, too. I think him being at one, he had never even been in this conversation when you look at how they ended last season. So Fornelli factored in the last season. They were 4-8, right? So it's hard to have a conversation about him. This year, they are 8-2. And, it's changed. So you're right. He has been consistent in a season. He's a big reason behind the record right now.
If we're going to give credit, too, to Shane Beamer about Lenore Sellers, we have to give a massive amount of credit to Deion and his staff for what he's been able to do. Think about it. That Colorado, it's very possible they have 1-2 in the draft, and that is solely based on the fact that Deion Sanders and his staff are there and what they've done.
Yeah, I mean, they recruited him at Jackson. Well, one's his son, but they recruited him at Jackson State, and those guys believed in them enough to say, I will pick up and go with you. And Travis Hunter believed in him even more than that because he decommitted from Florida State and went there.
And then also just going back to giving credit to the staff, like Mike was saying, they run their practices almost like an NFL practice. So he's preparing his guys for the next level. But, I feel like that has a lot to do with maybe some of the structure in which they run their practices.
We did not do NFL practices at Bama.
I know that
there's so many NFL guys on that staff.
Right.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So, and I know our play-by-play guy, Rich Walsh, was talking about that, pointing it out too at practice.
I know we got to mention Tech playing tonight real quick, in just a sec, but the only question I have for Shador Sanders when he goes pro, because I think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback, is, and it's the same thing I had for Caleb Williams, is how is he, because he's been in a system or an offense where they're up front, protection is lacked at times.
Sure.
So he has become accustomed to moving and scrambling, and sometimes you have to slow that clock down and say, I got to stay in the pocket and allow things to build and not bail too quickly. I think Caleb Williams has done it at times to a detriment to himself where he should have left, but he's trying. I hope Shador doesn't have to go through that. I hope he can kind of adjust quicker, because I think that does make your transition easier.
And that's why I give Deion a pass a lot of times when people say, when he says he'll be guarded about where Shador goes, I think a lot of people look at that as a negative. I'm fine with it because Lord knows, dude, you do not want him to go to the wrong system and all of a sudden your coordinator, much like Caleb Williams, is fired 8 games into the year and your career now all of a sudden is in great flux. So I think they're right to be a little bit concerned.
Georgia Tech in action tonight against NC State. It is the Yellow Jackets' home finale on this Thursday night matchup this evening. So be keeping an eye on this one.
Thursday night game backed ESPN. Up with a Friday night game that you'll get for Georgia next week. And you'll have all the things that come along with TIFF, that ESPN game, where you'll have the winning coach talks to SVP and everything else that comes along with those Thursday night matchups. So that'll be good. Georgia Tech should win this game, And I don't know that I've ever gotten on here and said that. Georgia Tech should win this game. NC State's not a great football team. They've struggled recently. I think you're getting healthy at Georgia Tech in a couple of the right places.
Coming off a bye, right? I think the last time they played was
coming
Miami.
Coming off a bye and doing all the right things. So I think they should go out and win this game, and hopefully we're watching Brent Key all over SportsCenter tonight.
You're a 9-point favorite at home where you have not lost all season.
Boom.
And I agree with what you said about
it. Dreams go to die.
Tiffany's got a really – I think Tiffany's got a point that should be – expanded a little bit by me because I'm going to do it. Haynes King, you're coming off a bye. Yeah. Haynes King could barely throw the last time you played against Miami, Tiff. You had to run Philo in, which worked, but maybe Haynes King is as healthy as he's been in a while. Hopefully with, you know, fingers crossed, he's as healthy as he's been in a while.
Yep.
You've taken back home field advantage under Brent Key at Georgia Tech.
Let's
keep
go.
It rolling.
Let's
go get that 7th win of the year.
Let's go.
Hopefully, maybe the Falcons can feed off of the win for the Yellow Jackets if they get it this week when they come off of their bye week. We'll see them in action next weekend. So what do they need to work on while they have this time off right now?
How much time you got?
Specifically, offense. Okay, the guys will break it down next. The top of the hour, we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
It means a lot. It's a special night, you know, obviously, you know, having Maddox announce it, being the Atlanta guy, and, you know, having a guy I looked up to when, you know, early in my career, and having Peeve here, you know, on the panel, it means a lot. So this is a special night.
That was Braves pitcher Chris Sale on MLB Network after winning the NL Cy Young Award, and how special it meant to him to get that honor and also to receive it from a former Brave himself. So what a special evening for him and for the entire Braves organization and fans out there.
Yeah, awesome to see. We mentioned earlier the 8th Cy Young in Atlanta Braves history, and obviously a long track record. his comment that he, you know, dipped his toe in that pool, and he probably brought that group down with Chris Sale being in there. But I keep going back to the fact that Alex Anthopoulos it was magic what he was able to do, bringing Chris Sale here and bringing him over from the Red Sox. And obviously you lose Vaughn Grissom, but I think everybody's okay with it when you bring in a Cy Young winner.
Well, yeah, and give Chris Sale credit for having an off season where he was able to be healthy and go through and stay healthy. He worked on it. Give Brian Snitker credit for managing his innings. You know, they did a good job of moving these guys around and you know, with extra rest essentially the entire season.
Right.
And Chris Sale went out there and just looked like the guy that was won a World Series with the Red Sox. I mean, he was phenomenal. The guy that was, and I've always joked about it, that was cutting up jerseys in the White Sox when he didn't like those throwbacks. I mean, Chris Sale he's misunderstood, I think, in some ways if he does never played for your team, because he's such a competitor. His mentality is so aggressive when he's out there. And I mean, I can't tell you that I enjoyed Braves baseball more, Tiff, than when he was on the mound this year.
And I want to come back to what you just said. First, I want to point out, though, you talked about a little bit about his journey and stuff. He's battled injuries since 2019, Tommy John surgery in March of 2020. Then from 2020 to 2023, he made only 31 starts. So for him to be able to get this honor, I'm sure means a lot to him for all he had to work through. And then again, you saying, you know, you don't kind of know what you have with him unless he's on your team. Well, how many times do we hear guys in that clubhouse just talk about what he had brought to the organization in terms of toughness, in terms of experience? A lot of guys leaned on him. And so, you know, I think it's really special.
And we talked about the, you know, Spencer Strider last year being a bulldog on the mound. That's exactly, I don't know what this team is without a guy like that personality-wise in this rotation. And that's exactly where Chris Sale picked up.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about Spencer Schwellenbach, right? He's such a huge fan of what he's done.
Schwelly.
You don't think he didn't benefit from having a guy like Chris Sale there that could help him?
Immensely.
Chris Sale, you could probably make a argument for and win it easily that he was not only, you know, he's not only the Cy Young, the Triple Crown pitcher, but he was also the MVP of this Braves team last year because he might have been the reason. He helped carry that team in a lot of ways, not just on the field, like you mentioned, Tiff.
Yeah.
Falcons on a bye week, so we will not see them in action this weekend. And so, like we discussed this week, really focusing on the defense and what they needed to improve on or change during this time off. Now it's the offense's turn. And what are you guys looking for them to improve on or change before they come back?
Well, you can talk a lot of what you can talk about a lot of things. I mean, I think you can talk a lot of things. I wrote down some things that were seemed to be numbers based, like red zone efficiency, third down efficiency, your time of possession. I feel like could get better because it could help the defense. And I even talked about penalties. But one of the things I didn't talk about, and Mike, I think you can kind of tell me if I'm off here, or if I'm right, you can tell me the ways that we can accomplish this.
Okay,
is I need more of what most people would call little shallow crossing routes, shallow drag routes, little intermediate routes that are moving away from defenders.
Because, mesh concepts.
Yes. Yeah. I guess that's what the expert would call it. You know, I'm using layman terms.
I was like, okay.
But I need stuff that runs away from people that's not necessarily deep downfield. Because I think you've got guys in this offense like Bijan, like Darnell Mooney. I think Kadarrell Hodge is a really good player. We've seen it, but when he gets the ball in his hands and he can be a yak guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he's physical and he has a little bit of speed. But I need more of that, and I know that it's built in the system. I literally have talked to coaches in this system, not necessarily in this team, but other guys that about these kind of concepts. And I'm curious of why you're not doing it or how to add more into it. And maybe they're doing it more than I realize.
Well, and I think they've done a little bit of that. The point with the mesh concepts is you have to catch the defense in man coverage, right? You can't run mesh concepts into zone. It takes away exactly what you're trying to do. And, you know, the mesh coverage has to be versus man, essentially, to work out the way you're talking about. You can't run away from coverage if you're just running right into coverage. And I think a lot of times you might have those sort of concepts put in for man coverage, and then you run into a zone situation where you're reading zone, and all of a sudden some of these wide receivers are sitting down in the middle of the zones, and that's where you see some of the underneath throws to a Drake Lund and Kyle Pitts and things like that.
But I'm okay with that to an extent. I feel like lately it feels like everything's breaking out, and we're not using the middle of the field as much.
I agree.
And so I'm okay. To me, though, that's still okay, because if I get Darnell or Kadarrell in a position where he runs into the soft spot of a zone and he just kind of gears it down or just stops, and Kirk can realize he get the ball quick, normally that's going to allow him to turn and maybe make a guy miss or go north and south a little bit.
Yeah, and I have in my stuff that I want to see them utilize the middle of the field more in the passing game. And it is interesting to me, how many times have we come in here, and I know that you notice it every single week, because I know Arch notices it. One of Kirk's first reads is a check down in the flat. And it's not even a check down. Like, he's not check down to, I think when people hear that, they go, okay, he's getting through his progression. He's going one to two to three, and then he's going, all right, nothing's there. Let me check down to Bijan. Like, a lot of times that's his first option. A lot of times Kirk's going, okay, defense is bailing. They're leaving the flat. They're going into cover three. Nobody's out there. Bijan can make something happen in the flat. But not very often do we see some of the option routes or the choice routes to Bijan actually stepping up in the middle of the defense and the vacated defenders, the linebackers bailing, where Bijan's actually catching the ball over the middle and is able to make something happen. So a lot of times he's constrained by the sideline. I'd love to see some of the stuff where he has the opportunity to step up, and maybe you can put somebody else in the backfield with him, be it, like you talked about, a Darnell or Kadarrell Hodge, that can run those options out into the flat as well.
Do you feel like that they've forgotten Algier a little bit in the passing game? Because hear me out for a second. Because I
forgot him completely last week.
Well, yeah, and I think some of the game dictated that. But I feel like that Algier is still a threat in the passing game. It's not to the extent that you have with Bijan, but he's still a guy that we've seen, even, and Arthur Smith did a good job of saying, hey, just because you're out here doesn't mean you're not going to get the ball thrown your way.
Yeah.
And I know they've thrown the ball his way some. I mean, if I look at my sheet, he's got, they've forgotten him. He's got 8 catches in the passing game this year.
I don't know this for sure, but it feels like 3 of those were in one game. Like, it feels like 3 of those came in one game this year. I don't know which one would have been. Maybe the Buccaneers early in the year, but I agree with you to an extent. But I also see it where Zach Robinson's probably looking at it, and you're in third and 8 plus probably a lot of the times where Bijan is catching the ball, or maybe not. But I would rather Bijan catch the ball, I guess, to my point. And so if you're going to have that situation where Algier might get it, it's like, I'd probably rather Bijan have it anyways.
Well, would you like to see him have it in the red zone, or as you guys kept calling it, the red area, which really got under my skin? I don't like that term.
You don't like
red
area?
Just call it the red zone. Just call the Red Zone.
Well, it's the Mercedes-Benz Drive Zone, according to Bo.
But what you were saying earlier was about how when the Red Zone issues, defenses are trying to force them to go out wide, use the sideline as, you know, that 12th man. Now you have a back that maybe could be your guy to take it up the middle? Or is that what you're wanting to see more of?
I am. I think if you're – Red zones is an interesting word there, because I think if you're between the 10 and the 20,
okay,
I like
you want to broaden it.
Well,
to
and here's the problem, Tiff, and it's like we just talked about a minute ago. The tight situation where you get inside the five, I don't think that's – and I think that logic tells you that's Tyler Allgeier time, because he's a tough runner and can run people over. But our offensive line doesn't block very well inside the five. So I would rather have Bijan inside the five, because then what can you see Bijan doing? He can accelerate towards the pylon. Right, and if everybody gets kind of locked in on the A and B gap, now all of a sudden Bijan can cut outside and have the vision to actually make it towards the pylon and outrun somebody. Where I don't think that's Allgeier's game. He's going to tuck in. He's going to put his face mask in Chris Lindstrom's lower back, and he's going to try to make it into a run.
Wait, isn't that what you guys didn't want though? Because defenses, and I know Bijan has a skill set to get past the defender with his quickness, but isn't that what you don't want in those situations?
I don't want Tyler Allgeier to bury his face. No.
Well, I've seen Tyler Allgeier get the ball in space and make people, well, miss, but also just run them over and keep
going.
Make
people regret trying to
tackle him. Yeah, and so I think that Allgeier can't have a game where he has zero touches.
No.
But I also think that they've done a good job of mixing him in at times, and when he has been hot, they have kept feeding him. Yeah. And that is all that I ask for. I just need... For me, to go back to it, I think you said it best. Utilize the middle of the field more. We've started to forget about it. And Kirk Cousins is a guy that he's going to be able to notice things. And as long as – and I think he's on the same page with Drake. I think he's on the same page with Darnell. I don't know about Kyle Pitts. That's a mystery to me, because he has a stretch where he plays phenomenal. Just don't come to me and say, well, they need to do more. They need to do more for Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts has got to win. And in fact, the last two weeks, our receivers aren't winning. They're not creating separation, and that hurts too. But if we can help them at all, I'd like to utilize the middle of the field.
Sure.
Stay with us here in the morning shift. Later on in the show, we are giving away two tickets to the Post Malone, I can say this on air, Big Ass Stadium Tour with Jelly Roll and Sierra Ferrell on Sunday, May 11th, 2025 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Tickets go on sale November 26th. 2024 at 12 p.m. at livenation.com. So you can see the Post Malone Big Ass Stadium Tour.
Is he playing country or rap or both?
Maybe it's both. Who knows? Well, hey, coming back, we're going in the huddle. We talked power rankings when it came to QBs in the college ranks. Let's do it in the NFL. We'll tell you where Kirk Cousins falls on the other side on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, this hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart, Lasting Clean, and we are going in the huddle to look at some power rankings as we go into NFL Week 12 of the season. And this is from Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports. On his list, Lamar Jackson is your number one QB. Joe Burrow, the Bengals, Josh Allen, the Bills, Jared Goff, Detroit Lions. Five is Justin Herbert, the Chargers. Six, Jalen Hurts. Seven, Jaden Daniels, the Commanders. Eight, Brock Purdy, 49ers. Nine, Kyler Murray, the Cardinals. 10, Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs. If I scroll down a little further, 18. That is where Kirk Cousins sits on this list, and he has the only reason his Falcons might be safe atop the NFC is because of him. They are giving him credit for that because they do find themselves in a hole right now. But again, Cousins 18th.
Yeah, and who would have thought that anyone would have C.J. Stroud outside their top 10 going into the season, because he's right above Kirk at 17.
But they also mentioned Kirk is third with turnovers, so he has 11.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's forced the ball, Tiff. There's no doubt he's had moments where he is. And that's kind of what Kirk is, though, right? I mean, you know when you have him that he's going to make some big plays. He's going to thread the needle in some tight windows.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a ton of yards and touchdown passes, and he's going to give you a chance to win every week. But he's also going to make some tight throws that go against you sometimes.
My question to you guys looking at this list is, given what we know about Kirk Cousins' skill set, is his ability to read defenses, but also lack of mobility, What other quarterback do you think is even comparable to what you'd love to see from Kirk Cousins? Like, if you could design it. Because I'm going down this list. He's not going to do what Lamar does. Joe Burrow, you know, he's elusive, but yeah, I would put them closer to one another. He's not Josh Allen. No. Jared Goff would probably be what I would design it as, because you're run first, you have electric running game, you can get north and south, you have a good offensive line, and he's going to, you know, do what he does. But he's not Justin Herbert, it's not Jalen Hurts, not Jaden Daniels, not Brock Purdy, not Kyler Murray, not Patrick Mahomes.
Jordan most of these guys have something in common.
Right. Well, my thing is that there is mobility for a lot of these guys in the top 10. And, you know, you'd love to see Kirk have an uptick in that, or at least what they ask of him. So I'm just thinking, like, if you got the best version of Kirk Cousins, which other quarterback in the league would he look like? Which one would you love to see him look like, knowing what his limitations are?
That's a tough question, because, you know, I'm going through, and everybody that I look at can move a little bit. I mean, I think Kirk is better than Sam Darnold. And he hasn't had a game to me as bad as a game that's like Sam Darnold's had. Jared Goff's a good comp.
It's funny, because I keep going back to, like, obviously CJ Stroud doesn't move much. He can if he has to, but he doesn't. Same thing with Jordan Love. And, you know, on down to 19, Tua, which is right behind Kirk. Tua gets the ball out so fast, it's like he's turning a double play every time.
Yep, that's the main thing we talked about in our game this weekend. But again, he extended a couple of their drives with his legs.
Yeah.
So he's got that ability.
Well, we've seen Kirk do it, too. I mean, we saw Kirk make a run once. he even juked a guy out.
The double dunk.
And I think he's head and shoulders above Derek Carr. But Derek Carr, as far as the mobility and stuff, I don't think I've ever heard people say that Kirk throws hospital
balls.
Nobody's
going to mistake him for Josh Allen, old Derek Carr. I guess my question really comes down to, what is the ceiling for a quarterback that plays with the style of Kirk Cousins?
Well, look, I think Jared Goff's season that he's having, and you look at numbers,
right. Yeah.
They're not very far. Honestly, Kirk's got more passing yards. He's got less touchdowns and the same amount of interceptions.
Yeah, and you almost feel like that a lot of Jared Goff, because of the success of the team and because of how good their defense is.
Well, that's it. But they also can put up points, too. Jared Goff's year is reminding me a lot of Matt Ryan's MVP year. There are differences because I don't know, it's hard to tell, but with six games left, Matt was probably going to end up with more touchdowns that year, and Jared Goff's already got more interceptions than Matt threw that year. But the reality is that I think that's the kind of year he's had, but he just has the defense is so good for that team that I think the offense doesn't feel the pressure. The problem for me right now with our team is our offense, you know, people talk about urgency. Maybe they're pressing too much. Or maybe the quarterback is pressing too much at times. And you saw it late in that game in Denver when they're down by a few scores, and he's going to make a throw that he really doesn't need to make. And it turns it over. So
I didn't feel like they were pressing against Denver. I'm with you, though. But I don't blame them for feeling that way, because it feels like if you don't score a bunch of points right now, especially with all the injuries last week, you ain't going to win.
Oh, I'm not saying I blame them. I'm just saying I think that's that might be the case.
Right.
The Buccaneers could be getting their superstar receiver back ahead of their matchup against the Giants. They sit at 4-6 on the season, and they may have some help now with Mike Evans. It looks like he's trending towards returning for that matchup. This is what Coach Todd Bowles told reporters on Wednesday. Evans, of course, dealing with that hamstring injury.
Yeah, they're still in it. They're not out. The Falcons have allowed them to not do anything and stay in it.
Right.
And so
unfortunately.
I think if with their schedule going down, I would take it slow with Mike Evans. I would make sure he's 100% because because when he's out there, I don't want to say you're completely different, because their offense is still played well.
Yeah.
But he is a difference maker. I mean,
changes a lot of things.
Dude, with players like that, you think about, you know, what we had in Julio here. And the one thing that Mike Evans is just feels like Mike Evans goes every year, 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. This is like every single.
He had 10 straight seasons.
I think he has a chance to have another one.
Makes me sick.
But he just but the touchdowns are there too for Mike.
Yeah, I'm just glad that.
And it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
I think Abe did a nice job yesterday on the social. I was looking at Abe Gordon's social, and he was talking about that if the as you look at it right now, if the favorites were to hold, that Tampa might be favored in six games. And Mike Evans being a part of that, I think, is probably a big reason why that, you know, why that holds. And look, he's just a difference maker, man. There's no doubt about it. And I'm with you. As a Falcons fan, I'd co-sign on that. Hey, take it slow, Mike Evans. Don't worry about it, man.
And you look at the rest of their schedules. They've already had both of their matchups against the Falcons. But they get the Giants, of course. And again, I'm not marking anything as automatic wins. But if you're getting Mike Evans back, you have the Giants, Panthers next, Vegas next. Like, the only team out of the ones that I just listed that's coming up would be the Chargers, that a team that's not in kind of the state that the other three teams are in. So it
sounds like,
and then they get
sounds
Dallas
like our next
that.
Four games or whatever. So. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, so we play common opponents.
Play all those guys. You know, it'd be interesting. It's just going to be the Falcons have to go out there and dig. This is not a spot that you can even think about coasting. Even if you go 3-3, like we talked about yesterday, you're not safe. And so the Tampa, this is not Tampa last year either, when they struggled so much in the run game and they relied so much on Baker. They can run the ball this year with Bucky Irving.
Yeah, I just don't think they're as good defensively as they've been in the past.
That's probably fair.
And I think that's probably the big difference to me. But look, they can lose. This ain't the same. I mean, Carolina can, you know, they can. No, nothing.
Well, they play Tampa and they play Atlanta.
Yeah, but we'll play them last game of the year. So you think
they've already hung it up?
Yeah, they'll hung it up.
Yeah, how'd that work out for us last year in December?
Well, as it turns out, we'd already hung it up as well.
Yeah, in hindsight, yes. Even though we were dead in the middle of a division hunt.
Well,
as long as,
let me tell you something. As long as we're not playing the game in the rain in Charlotte, we're not going to be, because it'll be here. And Kirk Cousins doesn't decide to roll out and throw it into about an array of one receiver and six guys.
Still can't believe that happened last year.
Well, Atlanta is home to the latest NL Cy Young Award winner in Chris Sale for the Braves. Bo is very excited about this one. So is Mike. We'll get back to it next, and we also have a mic'd up.
Yeah, craziness continues at the household. There's a decision being made that I'm not sure I can sign off on yet. It's a little bit too early. It's coming up next. I'm mic'd up on Sports Radio 910 The Game.
We are back here on the morning shift. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart. Lasting.
What is this bumper music? What are we playing here? I mean, I'm liking where he's going today, but it just,
you don't know that.
I need more.
Feels like a TLC song or something.
You really don't know this song, Mike?
Nah. I don't know it.
This is Suit and Tie by Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Oh, there you
as
go.
As long as I have there my suit and tie.
I could tell that Tiff knew it. She is like on the tip of your tongue going, what is it?
Well, I was gonna say Justin Timberlake, but I was like, wait, maybe he sampled it from someone else, and I didn't want to get blasted on. You know,
you were right, Tiff.
So that's one to me.
Yeah, Tiffany, don't live in fear of those people.
Well,
blast
I don't really
you?
Look at the just Twitters anyway.
There you go. Don't live in fear.
Just put it away.
Yeah, don't live in
put
no fear.
Away. I did see
that.
That
app soon.
I don't know where the interview was. I think it was Pharrell that was saying that, or who was it that was saying that he wrote a number of Justin Timberlake songs, and I didn't know that. They were doing the interview, and I was like, that's really cool.
Pharrell is talented, man.
Dude,
him
crazy.
And his hat.
He doesn't
crazy.
Age either.
So. Timberlake was in town last week, speaking of which.
How old is Pharrell? I bet
50s.
He's like 45.
No. I think he's in his 50s.
No, I think upper 50s.
Double check, but he's got to be like late 40s because I think I'm older than
him. I think he's 50. Go ahead.
Pharrell is 51.
Told y'all.
51. It doesn't look a day past 26.
I don't know if his skincare line is still going, but he came out with a skincare line not that long ago.
It's really kind of a sobering thing when we start talking about the musical artists you listened to growing up. And like in your younger years, and then you realize like, you know, Eminem's in his 50s, and like this guy's in his 70s, and you're like, I'm sorry,
but I didn't having a baby.
I didn't listen to Pharrell growing up. Like, I feel like Pharrell didn't get famous so I was already like out of college. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe,
that's what I'm talking about. In your 20s when you listen,
I think that's true. I think it's because back then maybe he was more behind the scenes than he is now. He's more in the forefront now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys subscribe to the thought that you have a limit on how much music you can listen to in your life?
What do you mean?
Like I've talked to, I think my dad was saying this, and he was being co-signed by somebody else that was around us. It's like you just get to a certain age and you stop listening to new music.
I was there for about a maybe a 5 to 7 year window.
Yeah.
And now I've started. You know who got me out of it was Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
I started listening to them, and I was like, oh, okay, well I can get down with this, and then. I started listening to,
Whiskey Myers.
Whiskey Myers.
Yeah.
And they've expanded now, and Amy got me the Zach Bryan. So I've started expanding out again.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, that's a real
thing. Do you think that's a real thing, Day-Day, where you just
– For me, no. I think it is a real thing for people, though, right. Like especially generations before us. They definitely did that. But for me personally, no. Like, am I picky about some of this new stuff? Yes, but I do hear new stuff that I like.
Interesting.
And, same. Yeah, interesting. I listen to anything still, and sometimes I'll still even go on a – search for somebody new. If I feel like you may, I don't know, randomly get a song on your
for sure.
Well, recommended to you, and
we went to Whiskey Myers like 3 weeks ago, and I heard them first on Yellowstone.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, man, this band's great. And
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, they're just a southern rock kind of band, and I just heard them on Yellowstone, and then I saw that a couple of NASCAR drivers like them, and we went to the show like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I was like, man, I love this group, but. I don't know that I still listen to new music, but I can feel myself edging that way where I'm like, some of it I'm just like, I can't get on board with this.
No. I try to, because, you know, you get to go to different stadiums, and Tiff, you know this very well, that there's different places play different stuff.
Sure.
And for warm-ups and stuff. And we were in Denver, and I was trying to listen, and they were playing a couple, I don't even know if you still call it, does rap still rap, or is it hip? What do you call it now? Like I don't
know. Rap, hip-hop.
About rap.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, it's one word. And it just, they just keep, it's just like whoever the artist was just like literally using one word and the same beat. And it was like that for you for 3 minutes. And I just thought,
I feel like I know what song you're talking about.
I don't know if I could listen to this more than once a month. Like this is just so repetitive.
I think it's more important, I guess, for me to keep a wide, vast of music. So, like, you guys were asking about Glorilla last week. Okay, I go from Glorilla to Noah Kahan to, like, Olivia Dean, someone that's been on the up and up.
Why do you think that's important for you?
I just like to have a vast array of music. My summer of Beyonce and Taylor Swift. Like, I just listen to everything.
I would really like to see how you react when you hear Glorilla's song. I really would love to be a fly on the wall.
Oh, wow.
I prefer you just call her to out, huh? Do it as I'll listen to her while driving, but then you want to, like, you know, not be as, you know,
really?
In your face. But I love it. I love her when I'm working out.
Okay,
in particular.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. I
saw her at oh my gosh, why did I just forget the One Music Fest? Yeah, I saw her there, but I'm not. I know what you're getting at. Like, I'm not like up and like I like beats, and so I like to feel the music. There we go.
I'm not up there
like dancing and stuff.
Being musically where you can listen to different stuff is that's good. Like I've got my season playlist has. I mean, I've got Greta. I've got Waylon Jennings.
I've also got
Nelly.
You.
The Air Force Ones. But it's all old stuff though. Like I can't. There's not a lot of new hip hop that I can listen to. Like I love it when everything you know was every fourth line rhymed or whatever. Like I just,
I'm sorry.
You know,
I'm sorry. I need to know what these two are kikiing about. Dylan and Day-Day.
Probably you.
Behind I know they are.
Yeah,
so that's why I sort of
bring it to
the
forefront.
Of the floor. You know.
Bring it to the forefront.
It's like put you on my list.
So the TGI Friday song. So Mike, Bo, you guys probably don't know. Glorilla has a song TGI Friday, and women for whatever reason, whether they're married, single, whatever the case is, they love this record because
we do.
Her opening lyric is like, you know, it's Friday something. I'm going out in these streets. Ain't no dude got me under control, basically. Or I ain't got no dude. I'm just going to do me. And I'm just trying to imagine Tiffany. Yeah, pretty much. I'm just trying to imagine Tiffany, like, kind of, you know.
Yeah,
you really digging into that lyric.
I mean, I know I don't, like, go out, but I think that lyric is, regardless if you have somebody or not, that lyric still, you know. It's pretty hard.
No, I think that's what. No, I don't
no,
think
it makes. I like
yeah,
it.
I don't. I don't think they're laughing at you. I think they're laughing with you, right?
I mean, it's just like when I still listen. Yeah. I still listen to 3-6 Mafia. Like,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I make myself
that.
Feel old, but that's kind of what she reminds. Right. You know, it's like she has more of that. That's why I like her and Meg, as opposed
my
to
wife loves 3-6
some of the
Mafia.
Other new stuff that's out.
Let me ask you a question: when you're in the gym and you're not with your trainer. You the person that's like got the big headphones and you're like just rapping to yourself, singing along with the lyrics, like a little 3-6 Mafia as you lift.
I will.
Yeah. I definitely do.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. By
and
the
I
way,
I try not. I try to like Ding. Keep it like.
I listen to old school rap when
self.
I'm. Yeah. Anyways. All right. Let's hit a mic though. Speaking of music, you guys like Christmas music? Are you kind of the kind of people that will put on Christmas music?
Everything feels so sad. Like, it's, I mean, it's sappy. That's kind of what I mean.
You know, I don't
it's
think like sad when I hear year. Christmas music.
No, it's yeah, cheery, either. But it's a tinge of like, the season's ending, the year's over, we're all getting older, we're all going to die. I don't know. So I tend to like,
no. I don't that's think anybody gets that when you vibe, Tim. I think that just might
wow.
be
the only person like, I've ever heard say Christmas music reminds them of those things.
It kind of just makes you sad in your feels. Wow. And like you're like another year's gone.
Honestly, say no. I've never thought of it that way, man.
I hope you'll look at it differently this year and cherish your loved ones because yeah. We're all inching towards
I mean,
it.
Sheesh.
I'm not a big
inching towards the light.
I'm not a big Christmas music guy. It has nothing to do with what she's saying. I want to distance myself from those comments. What I would tell you is it just makes it, I got burnt out on Christmas music a while back.
I think
back,
it's easy to, man.
And I have never been able to come back. And it really drives me nuts when people start it in like October.
I'm glad you said you got burnt out because I think if you listen to Christmas music for, I don't know, more than 6 weeks, it's easy to get burnt out on it, which brings you up to my point. I was instructed today to go get the Christmas tree out to be ready to put up.
Mine's
I'm
already
sorry,
up, dude.
Dude, I know, and you brought that up, and I judged you, and I was like, don't do it. And yet, here I am. I was instructed.
Bah, humbug.
I was instructed. I love Christmas. Not until December. I got to get through Thanksgiving, man. I don't want the Christmas stuff out yet. I'm the kind of guy that puts all the inflatables out in the front yard and, you know, all the other stuff going up, the big blow-up decorations and everything else. But it's too early. Put my foot down. No. Not
before Thanksgiving might be a violation. Usually, I think at our house, and I need to see what Jackie's cooking up at my parents' house. But usually, the Christmas tree is up after Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
that's usually the fair move.
Yeah, that's the way I side. But here we are, a week and a half before that threshold, which I would have usually leaned on.
Dude, mine's been up for 2 weeks.
Y'all are crazy.
I'm glad, though. Hey, I'm glad it helped me find those squirrels.
Y'all are crazy in that house. You got real or fake one?
Oh, it's fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ain't doing that. Why, you think I had a real Christmas tree in my
attic? We did real all the way until last year. All the way until last year.
It's just too much trouble.
It's a lot.
It smells good, though.
Well, hell, put a candle in there and burn it if you want to smell good.
That's what we're doing now.
Hey, stay with us here. Later on in the show, we are giving away 2 tickets to the Post Malone Big Ass Stadium Tour with Jelly Roll and Ciara Ferrell on Sunday, May 11th at 2020, in this year, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Tickets go on sale Tuesday, November 26th at noon.
What's the name of the tour?
LiveNation.com.
What's the name of the tour?
Post Malone Big Ass Stadium.
Well, put some bass in it.
Let's go!
Jelly Roll.
It's a big ass
friends.
Stadium.
All right. We'll be right back here on the morning shift. We got Rusty Menzel joining us. We'll get you the latest of college football front on the way on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Good morning, Rusty Menzel.
Your shirt's on right now.
It is. I flipped it in the hallway.
That's a great start. I told her I was very disappointed because the story behind it, when you go to bed early and you wake up the next morning, your shirt's on backwards, you have a lot better story.
Yeah.
She's not living.
Usually.
Not living.
Well,
Tiff
did what we call an in-game adjustment.
That's right. That's I like it.
Which was
I
just
like
putting
it.
The shirt on the right way.
Sometimes you got to.
I put my kid's shirt on backwards all the time. My wife climbs my butt of it. I'm like, no, it looks good. It's fine.
It's fine.
He's not worried about it.
I woke up in Panama City one time. My shirt was on backwards. That's another story. That's a 30 for 30, probably. There you
go. Sounds like a Corey Smith song if I've ever heard one.
There you go. You just made the latest country single shirt on backwards.
Yep.
Hey, I just walked out there and I asked you with the conversation we were just having on air, is there a limit to how much music you can intake in your life and before you start just putting
that's
it on
great,
repeat?
That is such a dad.
I got it from my dad.
You told me. That is 100% me.
Yeah.
My kids are like, Dad, you don't listen? I'm like, no, I like Fleetwood Mac. I like LL
Same.
Cool J. I'm comfortable. My playlist is a rotation of about 40 songs.
Yeah.
And they're
gonna
it?
Be, it's going to be the same. I just shuffle
just
them up.
40?
I have a playlist on my boys' trip because I'm in charge of music every year.
There
and
you
I have to play. I got tested this year on my boys' trip.
Someone
I had about,
tried to dethrone you?
No, they don't dethrone, but I almost ran out of music.
Oh, no.
Dude, 2 hours on a boat? and I'm in charge of it.
And you have
there's only so many hits that's you can tough. Come back to. That's there's tough. Only so many times you can
well,
sing.
Well, unless you continue to take
there's
into
only
music.
So many times you can sing going back to Cali, Tupac. You know, a bunch of 50-year-old dudes singing going back to Cali three times.
God, we need a video of this. You'll listen to that on some
that'd be classified. But and then I have my special playlist that the only special people get to hear that playlist. And then I have my dad list.
I don't want to call you up, but I want to bring this up. We were just having this conversation on air. We were talking about the College Football Playoff Committee, their rankings. You gave me what your top five is.
Yeah.
And I almost
sounds
fell
like
out
you
of,
and Drew Butler made it
I
together.
I almost fell out of my chair.
Because we're grown-ass smart men.
Okay. Andrew. All right. Yeah. Sure.
You guys are turning into homers.
Let's hear for the people what your top five would be. Because I think it is interesting. And I think there's a lot of valid points you have inside of this top five.
My top five is Oregon, Ohio State, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Georgia. And I take in consideration, take all the other stuff out. Who do you not want to play?
Sure.
Who scares you to death in a one-game scenario? And I think Oregon, Ohio State, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Georgia would worry everybody else in the bracket in a one-game setting.
Yeah, well, and this is the conversation we had with the four team, and this is why we brought it up, because the conversation always with the argument is it most deserving team or is it best team?
That's two different
you
questions.
You ranked the top five according to who you feel like is the best team.
Best teams.
Then you got to six, and who did you put?
I had Texas.
Okay, that's where we start to lose one another.
Okay, now here's my thinking on Texas, and they got their you-know-what kicked by Georgia in the best game they have played by far, best opponent they have played by far. Okay, but I'm telling you, Mike, 1 through 85, that roster, would that not worry you playing
Texas?
Oh,
for sure, and that's the matchup that you're looking at right now for Bama if they get the SEC Championship game, and it scares you to death.
They got two elite tackles. They got a quarterback that got kind of rattled a little bit against Georgia. They got Isaiah Bond, who's former Alabama player. They got guys. Can they put it together?
That's the question.
Okay.
But they worry you.
Hold on. Stop here. All right. Who's the best team Georgia's played? Who is the best team in your mind Georgia's played?
It's two different answers. Because at the time, Alabama wasn't, in my opinion. I think Alabama's the best team Georgia's played based off what I saw that Jalen Milroe do against LSU.
Okay.
He's the X factor.
Well, he did it against Georgia, too,
he's
by the way.
At first half, he did. He's the X factor in college football to me. Because if Jalen Milroe plays like he did against LSU,
sure,
Alabama can have a parade.
Okay, who's the second best team?
Your voice was going up before.
Who's the second best team that Georgia's played?
Just saying.
It's Ole Miss.
Keep it calm.
It has to be Ole Miss.
So you're telling me, now hear me out for a second.
Yep.
Keep it on low level.
That Georgia has lost to the two best teams they've played.
Yes, they have.
But
on the road.
But Texas gets knocked for losing to the best team they've played.
Yeah, they got knocked. They're behind Georgia.
But I know, but that's why Georgia – look, I think his
argument actually makes sense
First off, I'm a proponent of Georgia being in the playoff.
Yeah.
I don't care if they host a home playoff game. I don't think it matters.
Yep.
I think they should be in it no matter what because they've played one of the toughest schedules in this country.
They played the
But the reality is when people want to say
– they're not tougher than Florida's.
No, they're not.
Well, in a couple of weeks it won't be.
Right, exactly.
Because they're about to go through, gauntlet.
But the reality is that I hear people say, well, you know, so-and-so lost to the best team they've played. Penn State lost to the best team they've played. Well, Georgia's two losses are to the two best teams they've played. So the reality is we need to stop knocking teams on that and also look at their best wins too, right? Because I think Georgia, if you look at it on paper, might have the best win in the country because of where and when they played Texas.
They definitely might have the best pair of wins after last weekend.
Well, I think, and just take who I cover and who I've followed growing up, take that out of this. Georgia has to be looked at differently to this point because of who they have played. Nobody else has that resume. If Florida was sitting here at number 8 and had two losses and had won two of those games, they would be the team to discuss.
I agree.
They're not going to get into that part. So Georgia, to me, is the team you go. If I'm in the committee and I'm sitting there and I go, guys, put Georgia up there. There's nobody's played that resume yet.
I want a short pivot, but it kind of revolves around the same thing. Does the loser of the SEC championship game get left out or get knocked way back?
I don't think they are because Sankey can't. You can if Alabama loses that game. Say Texas beats Alabama 31-28.
Right.
There's no way they can hold Alabama out. And here's a question. The next question is going to be: does Tennessee get knocked out? Well, they beat Alabama head to head.
Yeah.
It's not saying it's right. I'm telling you right now.
There's no right answer.
There's no. If Alabama gets to that game and they lose and they don't get run out of the building, which they rarely do, I don't see a way that Sankey goes, because I'm telling you, you see Lane Kiffin's comment.
Sure.
And I'm telling you right now, that is 99% of what I hear from coaches.
Oh, for sure.
You know who?
Nobody wants any part of that unless you're Georgia 2022 and you know you want to win to get the bye. If you're Alabama 20, you want to play that game.
Well,
and get the bye.
It's not possible, but you know who I think should want to be in it? Tennessee.
Yeah, oh God,
if they could, yeah, right? Those bubble teams, I'd want to play.
Risk reward,
exactly.
Risk reward,
exactly.
Well, and I mean, your South Carolina point. People don't understand that when you talk about how hard Florida's schedule is, you talk about how hard Georgia's schedule is. I think you could make a case that South Carolina's played the third hardest schedule in the country. They've played LSU, they've played Kentucky, they've played Ole Miss, Alabama, Oklahoma, A&M. You know, Clemson will play at the end of the year. Vanderbilt.
They're going to.
And Missouri.
They're going to run through Clemson.
So does this mean you guys are okay with his list now?
I think there's some teams too high. I think winning still matters.
Given the caveat of what we just talked about, it's we don't ever know from the committee whether or not they're doing most deserving or best. We don't ever know. They just kind of just say, hey, this is what it is.
No transparency.
I think Rusty is simply saying these are the best teams, and this is how I see it. And I think there's a lot to be said. I wish the committee would do one or the other. I wish the committee say, we're going to take the most deserving teams.
Why can't we have a transcript? You do not have to have a name. All you got to do is say number one thinks that Georgia should be here. Number two person in there, their comments were Alabama should be number one, or number three, Indiana hadn't played anybody. Why can't we – if this was Congress and something was going on, it'd be on TV.
Oliver C-Span.
It'd be on TV.
I think that's
hilarious.
This
is college football. Can we not have some transparency? You don't have to put somebody's name on paper. Can we see a transcript of what was discussed so the entire public knows the consumption of what is being discussed and how they're ranking these teams?
They don't want you seeing the fact that they go by, you know, it's a popularity contest for who's going to watch what.
Yeah.
They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to think that they, even though these teams have already played, so whatever we do, we've got to get them both in. But we have to have them opposite. So if they do rematch, it has to be in a certain situation.
And when he was on with Abe, I can't remember the guy's name. He was on with Abe that night.
Right. CFP.
He talked about when they take the four conference champions, they do not care after that point what is going to be if somebody rematches and all that. You can't tell me that if they sit in that room and they go, okay, we're 8-9, and Georgia and Alabama are going to play again in Tuscaloosa. It's not happening.
Or Georgia going to Oxford.
Yeah, it's not
which
happening.
Which is very realistic. To me,
they're going to say, let's change this one spot up. That way we have Notre Dame and Alabama, and we have Georgia and Penn State.
You know they do that.
Yeah. Well, but they're saying they're not.
No, that's
I agree. Yeah, I'm just saying that's going to be the next thing that everybody's going to be talking about.
But that's okay. That's okay because it gives us something we haven't seen. That's the whole point of it.
I agree. But they're not going to sit there and go, okay, here's the teams. Here's how they rank. This is how it falls. No. In Georgia, they're not going to want to see Georgia and Alabama in the first round in Tuscaloosa because we've seen that.
There is a matchup this weekend that between two teams that I think control a lot of what the landscape will look like. Neither team in the driver's seat in terms of going to college. Well, Texas A&M and Auburn. Yeah. I don't know if you looked at that line.
Yeah, what is that?
What did you say, two and a half?
What the hell?
And they're playing at 7:30. That should be a noon game.
It's in Auburn. It's a 7:30. It's a night game in Auburn. I think that is a very tough ask for Texas.
My point being
is that those two teams the following week, who are they going to play? Going to play Texas? They're going to play Alabama.
Yeah.
In what will be monumental showdowns in terms of the SEC. That's a weird one. I wanted to throw that number at you just to see if you had any insight on why that looks like that.
I've been so concentrated on Army plus 16.5 against Saturday.
There you go. Hey,
sneaky rusty pick.
You don't think it's because Mike Elko came out and said that, hey, look, we are not focused on anything else other than Texas. I mean, Auburn this weekend.
Yeah. Dude, if he loses that game after that comment, oh, my goodness.
I just think that A&M is like the sneaky part of this entire ordeal. They can throw a wrench into everything.
They're kind of banged up. I tell you who can throw a wrench into some stuff is if Florida beats Ole Miss.
What's happening, brother?
That is going to mess a lot.
I had an Ole Miss parent send me a text, and me and this guy are very good friends. I covered his son, and we're on good terms. But he texts me a couple weeks ago. He goes, you get it. You rip Ole Miss on the radio. I was like, no, I don't rip Ole Miss. I said Ole Miss better be on upset alert going to Arkansas. Well, guess who was wrong? Me, because Ole Miss ran through them.
Mm.
And then I was basically said, I don't know what Ole Miss is. We're going to find out against Georgia. Well, we found out. They kicked their tail.
Yeah.
But we're going to find out again on Ole Miss this week because for 2 weeks, everybody's been telling them how good they are.
Right.
Group hugging.
And I think a lot of that has to do with Lane Kiffin.
They're
a roller coaster.
Yeah. You know, this is a tough one now.
Better buckle up this weekend. We'll be watching.
The swamp.
We'll be catching up with you next week.
Noon. Oh, I'll be catching.
That was our
Rusty Menzel joining us here on the morning shift. By the way, you can call in now to try to win those tickets, two of them, to the Post Malone Big Ass Stadium Tour at 404-726-0929. Jelly Roll will be there. So will Sierra Ferrell on Sunday, May 11th at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Tickets go on sale Tuesday, November 26th. At noon at livenation.com. But again, call us right now, 404-726-0929 to be caller number 9 to win those. I'll announce the winner when we come back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the morning shift with a winner for the Post Malone Big Ass Stadium Tour with Jelly Roll and Sierra Ferrell on Sunday, May 11th at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And that winner of two tickets is Dan from Carrollton. So congratulations to you, Dan, from Carrollton, on being caller number 9 and winning those tickets. You can still get yours if you go to livenation.com. Tickets go on sale November 26th, starting at noon.
So, love it. Love it.
Can't say
congrats,
big ass
Dan.
Anymore. That's the last time for the
today.
For today.
Yeah, you can say it next week probably, right, Dylan? Are we doing it next week?
Just today and tomorrow.
Just saying. One
of you guys will get the honor tomorrow.
No, we're going to make Tribble say it.
Rob.
Rob will love to say it.
Can't wait to hear him talk about Post Malone and Jelly Roll.
I feel like Rob would like Post Malone if he listened to him. Maybe he does.
Dude, I
don't think either one of Post Malone's genres scream Rob Tribble at me.
Yeah, you might be.
I refuse to put Tribble in a box like you boys do, but I don't know. There's no telling where Tribble will surprise you.
That's true.
Every twist and turn, he's a surprise.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. All right, let's talk a little bit about Chris Sale winning the Cy Young Award yesterday. You're doing great, Tiff.
Sorry, I dropped all my papers, so I'm back.
We heard you scurrying around
over
there.
I'm trying not to move because my jacket's like swish, swish, because it's so cold in here. So I'm standing
still. Yeah, 74 degrees in here.
It's freezing.
Yeah.
Can't take these conditions.
Anyhow, am I wrong for getting excited about what this rotation could look like next year? And obviously, if you're just now tuning in, we've been talking about Chris Sale winning the Cy Young Award yesterday, 26 of 30 first place votes, which Bo did not like.
No, it should have been 30 of 30.
It should have been unanimous.
Do you think Ronaldo Lopez should have gotten more votes? Because I know that he kicks them in there at the end.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think Chris Sale was the front-running best of the best pitchers all year from
I'm not talking about first place votes, by the way, for Ronaldo Lopez. Just, you know.
Sure. Hell, I think he could have gave some. If Paul Skeens got some, why did Spencer Schwellenbach not get any? Because Spencer Schwellenbach was phenomenal in situations that actually mattered. But you know what? I digress. I would tell you that I am curious in what you actually think this rotation will look like next year, because I don't know what it looks like at all.
Well, I know that we've already talked about Strider's not coming back to start the year. You know, that'll be a summer ordeal when you talk about him. So I'm going to include him in that, but you won't have him for the entire season. I don't know who your opening day is. I would have to think it was the reigning Cy Young winner. But then again, Strider is still that guy inside the locker room, I would have to think.
But he's not going to be ready.
Yeah, I know.
So he won't be opening day.
I'm just saying, like, as far as the ace goes, it seems like it has to be Chris Sale at this point. But it's Spencer Strider. It's almost like we always talk about the NFL. You don't ever want to lose your position because of injury. But I just feel like that as far as the mentality goes, that's already happened.
Yeah. That only matters on opening day to me.
Yeah.
Because
who the ace is?
Well, opening day and opening game of a series, right? Other than that, it doesn't really matter because, you know, guys get injured, the rotation flips around, you might stretch it out again because you're going to have Ronaldo Lopez, who you're still probably going to want to conserve, Chris Sale, who in this age you still want to conserve, and when you do get Spencer Strider back, you do want to, kind of conserve and stretch him out and give him maybe an extra day of rest. Not to mention, what is Charlie Morton back on the rotation? Spencer Schwellenbach is going to be a guy that is going next year is going to pitch more innings than he's ever pitched in his career. So I think with all those guys, you're probably going to do a lot like you did this year. But who are those other guys? Because I don't think Max Fried is coming back.
No, he's not.
I mean, I know that he declined the qualifying offer, which is standard operating procedure, or he will That's nothing new. That's kind of how it goes. That's just the way it goes. And the reality is, who's where and who is in this rotation and what does it look like? I don't know. I know we got a good core. I would say you should be excited about the core, yes.
And excited about the core with Chris Sale then.
Yeah.
Being able to continue to lead this group. It was a guy that really brought a lot of, I guess, what's the word I want to use here?
Moxie.
Yes.
Yeah.
To that clubhouse. And the guys openly talked about how much they appreciated it.
Yeah, and I think, to your point, the core, if it's Sale, if you get to midsummer and it's Sale, Strider, Lopez, and then Schwellenbach as the four, I don't know where you go with the fifth. I know that the Morton thing's out there and everything else going on around that. But, I mean, you still have some money to go find somebody, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and here's Sale. Sale talked about who all helped him get here and to be the leader of that core you just talked about.
Yeah, I mean, talk about motivation, right? You know, to be able to show my sons the hard work, dedication, and, you know, not giving up. You know, my wife having my back the whole time. I'm sure I was a real peach at times during some of those injuries. So my parents, my family, I was talking to my dad the other day about this and whether it did or didn't happen, he was proud of me. And again, can't speak enough about my guys I had on my corner this year. You know, being in Atlanta, that staff was unbelievable. George and his staff in the training room kept me on the field. I said it earlier. It wasn't me just rolling out there. Had an unbelievable coaching staff, and man, I gave up one unearned run this year. One. So that means my guys in the field were making unbelievable plays. It seemed like, you know, I'd go out there and pitch two or three innings, I'd have five runs on the board. And then you get to the bullpen, I mean, absolute lockdown. They weren't the best in the league. I don't know who was. So a lot goes into this. And again, like, I just can't express how thankful I am for everybody that stuck by me. It would have been easy to kind of jump ship and write me off. And a lot of people texted me through the tough times, and I'm thankful for them, and I'm happy to share this moment with them.
That was Chris Sale on MLB Network after winning the NL Cy Young Award. That one earned run that he mentioned?
One earned run.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. One unearned run over an entire season is pretty nuts. And he did, you know, he did the right thing and took his cap off to the defense. He's also a lot better at giving acceptance speeches than Paul Skeens. So that's good. So,
well, I mean,
he's lived a couple lot, you know. Yeah. Seasoned vet.
What is he? Rookie. 16 years older than Paul
Skeens. Seasoned veteran.
Sal's only 35.
I thought he was 37. I might be wrong on that.
I wasn't aging him.
Take
I'm
that
just
back.
Saying
he's 35.
You know.
All right. Skeens, what, 22? 21?
Yeah.
No, you're right. He has been, he's lived quite a few. He's seen more
injuries, all of it. He's been through a lot.
He's seen more the revolutions of the sun and moon than Paul Skeens has, but there's no doubt about that. But I mean, look, I think it just shows the leader he is with everything he just said. He thanked everyone,
yeah,
under the sun in this organization. But the reality is, he understands that all of those people are the reason why he is able to accept this award at this point. He should have already accepted it at some point in his career. Hell, halfway through the year, I didn't know that he hadn't. I thought he already had a Cy Young under his belt because of, you know, the pitcher he has been in the past at certain points in his career. Look, I think you're right, though, when you both of you kind of mentioned the pitching staff as a core. Don't forget the core that you hopefully are getting back when Ronald Acuna Jr. finally does enter the lineup again, and you'll have Austin Riley back healthy, and you're going to have some points.
It's going to feel like you're finally able to breathe oxygen again.
Well, it's going to like you went out and signed a bunch of big-time free agents.
Yeah.
And by the way,
dang.
You probably still need to get one somewhere, like maybe at shortstop or, I don't know, maybe another outfielder. There's still room to improve this team. And you're going to be without Jimenez next year in the bullpen, and that's something you're going to need to address as well because that guy – whether people realize the people that watch the team day in and day out for 162 games understand how important he was to the back end of that bullpen.
Do you think they'll go out and try to find another starter before the season?
Well, I think Charlie Morton is a guy that would depends on what Charlie Moe does. And you guys can laugh or
no, you're a big Charlie
as Tiff would do to me or eye roll. But I do love Charlie Morton. I'm a huge Charlie Morton fan. I don't know what you guys need to understand. That's what a fifth starter is in Major League Baseball. It's a guy that gives you four to six innings, three to four runs, an outing, and that's what the fifth – you're not
– I would make the argument that you could put a Bryce Elder, A.J. Smith-Shawver in to do that.
No, you could not.
For the amount of money you might have to play.
One of those, yes. Bryce Elder is, he either gives you five with one earned or two with seven. And I can't.
No in between.
I can't. That roller coaster, I am not willing to ride this year.
Develop a third pitch, man. That's all.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We have a life of Squid ahead.
Big yeah. win.
What? Sorry.
You are not going to treat me that way. I am not.
You just did.
I am not. I'm not going
to
take it.
Oh, you have to.
Get your tees out. Come on.
Big win last night for my Kennesaw State Owls, and an ESPN staple is going away. Next, Morning Chef Sports Radio 910 of the game and the Odyssey app.
Odyssey.
I got you.
Wrapping things up, close to wrapping things up here on the Morning Shift. We got Thursday night football on the college ranks with Georgia Tech playing NC State in Georgia Tech's home finale of the season going down tonight at ESPN.
The rambling wreck from Georgia Tech, man, taking on a game they should win tonight, and hopefully they're able to come up with that. And you're looking at, you know, the possibilities for them, obviously, you know, to finish the season strong. And all eyes will be on that matchup next Friday night. I do love the fact that they're playing next Friday against Georgia, but now obviously they got to take care of business today first and knock off NC State.
Yeah, Abe and I are going to do the lead-in show to that, the preview show, down at New Realm.
Next Friday?
Yeah, next
That'll
Friday.
That'll be awesome, dude.
Yeah, I'm actually – we heard Abe and I actually agreed on something, believe it or not, just now. It's kind of funny, but this is going to – I think this is a big game for Georgia Tech, and the reason is that I feel – like, in the past, Tech has kind of stumbled when they shouldn't. And I'm not talking about this team or, you know, it's really not a Brent Key era
right.
thing.
Yeah. No,
but
I agree.
It's been one of those things. And it would just be great to see Georgia Tech heading into Athens next Friday with a chance to win their eighth game, right?
Because awesome.
This will be given the seventh. This would also make them undefeated at home. So you've kind of taken back Grant Field, which is, I know it's kind of an old thing, but, you know, Bobby Dodd. It's just kind of cool. It feels like Tech is the Tech I grew up around or
right.
own. Like the 90,
Scrappy.
The 90, the 91, 92 teams.
Yep.
Or the George O'Leary, to your point,
sure.
the Scrappy. Like, it feels like Brent Key has gotten them back to where there is. Now, look, I was a huge.
What's funny is I'm pretty sure Brent played under George O'Leary.
He did.
Yeah.
And he coached with him at UCF. I was a big Paul Johnson guy. I enjoyed watching that offense because when it rolled, it was just
beautiful.
It was one of those things where if you were down late, God, I can't. Really, there's nothing. There's nothing I can do.
Right.
But when that offense was rolling and they were doing well,
yes.
it gets so much fun to watch because you're like, ooh, what is this going to play? Is this going to be another inside dive?
Right. Dive again. No, man, I love it. And you mentioned it. I think it's awesome because Georgia Tech had to buy it over this past weekend, but they get the Thursday, and then they'll have another eight-day spell before they have to play Friday against the Bulldogs. I know that originally Georgia high schools were scheduled to have next Friday off essentially because of that game, but you know, in accordance with that game, they had to reschedule a lot of those high school games because of Hurricane Helene and not give that bye week in the playoffs. So there will be some high school teams playing next Friday, but nonetheless, man, I think it's cool because that is such a great rivalry that sometimes goes under the radar nationally. You know, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, Auburn, some of the other, you know, national matchups. But I think that needs its own kind of window.
Well, so. Yeah, and I don't think it can afford to go under the radar anymore this time, especially when you have a Georgia Tech team coming off of just beating Miami. Mm. So, I mean, and then if they get some more momentum tonight, it should be a really good game.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it.
I should also mention, you guys, got to plug before your segment, Bo. I'm going to get to MC another college football playoff event. So I'll be doing that at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Can you ask them, Tiff, is it the best teams or is it the most deserving teams?
Well, see, I think we'll be talking more about the charitable efforts and the you know, extra yards for teachers
okay,
and
fair,
that kind of thing.
Fair,
but
okay,
I'll see if I can sneak that in.
Can you get me in to do the Dr. Pepper football toss? Can you make that happen?
You got any student loans you need to pay off? Is that what?
You want me to go ahead and
actually, yes,
tuition?
I do. I still do. I'm not in college anymore, but I still
those
have
those are
loans,
for college so. Students. Quit being greedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a working man now.
Yeah. I tried.
So, see what we can do about that.
Yeah, I just told you, New Realm. I'll be down there. Abe and I will be at the New Realm Brewery next Friday.
Beer.
Yes, the Allen
I like
Lager.
That. I like that word.
Like beer.
They got
beer,
a Georgia like Tech beer, too. I got to remember the name of it. And also, I'll be out there Saturday next Saturday, not this one, but the one after Thanksgiving at Miller's Ale House. I know Dylan's coming to hang out with me. So if you just don't like me, but you do like Dylan, come on out. Dylan will buy you a beer.
Yeah, so I don't like
that's
you.
That's right. I will.
So I'll just stay here.
Well, we didn't invite you.
Okay.
I wasn't invited,
we were talking to Tiff and Garrett and Dylan and all of our friends listening to us. However you listen, either just the Odyssey app or 92.9 The Game, just right over the radio, the terrestrial way. Isn't that what they call it?
What?
Yeah, that's right.
That's
terrestrial
right.
Radio.
All right. Hey, speaking of Kennesaw State, they defeated Abilene Christian last night, 84-78. And they play Rutgers Saturday. They play number 24 Rutgers at home.
I was like, pause.
At home. News.
Number 24. It's at 1 o'clock. That's where my lines got crossed. But that's a big Kennesaw State basketball game right there. Yeah, it's huge. The program needs – look,
program.
Football was rough.
That's my Petway, man. Bama guy.
The program has a chance to be good in their first season in Conference USA. All right. I don't know about y'all. Tiff probably more than you might. But, because we've established that – I don't know what you did when you got home from school. But when I got home from school, I would always go – and watch Around the Horn at 5 o'clock.
What age group are you talking about? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this was probably like into high school.
Okay.
Right out of college. Or right in college.
We're going, okay. All right.
Because it had to have been because it's been on, Around the Horn's been on 23 years.
I was doing that then, but then earlier years, not to get a sidetrack because we're slow on time, I was probably watching like Ricky Lake and like, who else was on after
Maury.
School? Stuff I shouldn't have been watching. Yeah.
Maury.
Like, I think a lot of us were. How do we turn out like this? I don't know.
What's the bald head guy's name?
Which one? Montel?
Montel,
yeah.
Solid.
Remember Sally Jesse Raphael?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
His glasses?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to get you off track.
Sometimes I think Quinn Snyder's glasses look like this, but shout out to you, Quinn.
Continue.
It's coming to an end next year. Middle of next year, they're going to end Around the Horn. No, hold on. Pardon the interruption, which was the better of the two shows. Let's just call it what it is. Michael Wilbon is my dude. Love Michael Wilbon. Tony Kornheiser can kind of, But I've always liked Michael Wilbon. Wilbon's been a good dude to me, too, in behind-the-scenes stuff. He's always – I mean, he is – since day one, and I was, like, too dumb to realize what I was doing at the time when I was a young producer, he was the nicest guy in the world. I mean, I have a lot of respect for him. Their show is not mentioned in this, but Around the Horn, which Tony Reale is kind of the host of that and the mediator, that show is coming to an end. That show was phenomenal when I watched it young, way back in the day when it first started. I don't really watch it anymore. I still watch Around the Horn a little bit. I don't really watch PTI.
Kinda
Around the Horn like I used to, but PTI I do watch.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way.
But it's come to an end.
They used to have like the same four or five people that would be on Around the Horn, and you always kind of relied on what they'd be saying. And as soon as it started getting to where there was like 10 or 12 different people that would be there, I was kind of lost. I had a relationship with those guys. You know what I mean? You'd watch. You'd build up. You knew what they were going to say. You knew what angle they'd come from, and then it was like, I don't know who this person is.
I always wondered what Woody Page's chalkboard would say.
That's a good call.
That is a good call. When we come back here, we'll find out what's coming up on the Steakhouse. Stay right here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.